Committee on State Government Innovation and Veterans will be in order. Today is Monday, the 18th of April. And the first item on our agenda is Senate File 247, Senator Doms.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm here,
Senator Dames, I understand that you have an author's amendment.
Yes, we have an author's amendment. It is the A2 amendment. And that just clarifies language in the first part of the bill.
Senator Dames, Senator Gazelka.
I move the A2 amendment.
Senator Gazelka moves the A2 amendment. It should be in your folders, members, to that amendment, Senator Dames.
I would appreciate if that amendment would be passed. It's to clarify some language in the first part of the bill.
All right. Anything you need to offer, Mr. Bodern?
Mr. Chairman, the amendment works the way it's drafted.
All right. Thank you very much. On the A2 author's amendment, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and committee members, this bill is in regards to public employees insurance program. I'll just give you a quick overview of what the bill will do. The bill changes the procedures to determine whether local government units can participate in public employees insurance program. The areas that are going to be affected would be the Section 1, the public employee participation. We've changed the language to state a majority of all insurance eligible employees would have to approve the decision to participate. Also, the exclusive representative and the employer compare their PEEP to the current coverage, and the employer approve the decision for the unit of local government to opt into the PEEP program. Also, we would require that either all or none of the insurance-eligible employees move into the program. Under Section 2, the current law requires local units of government to allow former employees and their dependents to continue to participate in the employer's insurance coverage at the employee's expense. This section eliminates that existing requirement to pool the former employers under age 65 and their dependents. And then in Section 3, there'd be the coordination to specify the local unit of government to allowing retired employees to continue health insurance coverage within the plan offered by the local unit of government must provide coverage that is coordinated with Medicare benefits. I also have some folks that would like to testify on behalf of the bill, and there's some folks that would like to testify against the bill. To start with, we have Ms. Schwab.
Correct.
And Ms. Schwab would like to testify on the bill, so I'll turn it over to Ms. Schwab.
Ms. Schwab, please state your name.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and members. My name is Grace Kelleher, and I work for the School Boards Association. We represent every school district across the state of Minnesota. And members, we'd like to thank Senator Doms for carrying this bill. We strongly urge your support, as outlined in Senate File 247. School boards are responsible to make sure school district budgets are balanced and that benefit costs are in line with state and local financial support for educational services. To protect employees' interests in salary and benefits, state law outlines a collective bargaining process by which decisions are made about how compensation is reached. State law does not allow school boards to make unilateral changes in the aggregate value of insurance benefits, including even a simple change in provider networks. That is why we are concerned about current law, which allows employee groups to make unilateral decisions to move into the Public Employees Insurance Program, or PEEP. Historically, PEEP has been an insurer of last resort, and enrollment into the program hasn't been on our radar screen. However, we have been made aware through previous testimony by Education Minnesota that at least 220 school employee groups in Minnesota are currently seeking health insurance bids from PEEP. PEEP may be able to provide better coverage at a better price for employees of the public school, but at this time, the people paying the bills and who are responsible for balancing the budget are not aware of what these bids entail. We don't know which employee groups in these districts are considering moving into PEEP and whether or not that includes all insurance-eligible employees. That's why we're supporting this common sense reform outlined in 247. For starters, legislation requires the employee groups in a particular school district to get on the same page and decide by majority vote if all the employee groups or none desire to move into PEEP. This will prevent problems caused by the current law where a teacher group may leave a district health plan and leave the support staff behind. The legislation also requires that the exclusive representative and the eligible employer to review the insurance bids from PEEP and compare them to current health plan offerings. Keep in mind, the school employee groups currently seeking bids aren't required to share the information they are gathering. More importantly, when it comes to PEEP enrollment, the bill requires the eligible employer who is paying the bill and who has the fiduciary responsibility for the district's finances to approve the decision to enroll into PEEP. The last provision of this section of the bill extends consumer protection and best practices competitive bidding requirements to PEEP. The legislation requires PEEP to give back individual groups their claim tracking reports upon request and allows those groups to seek competitive bids without penalty. With that, Mr. Chairman, I'll conclude my testimony and stand for questions.
You know, it's my intent, members, is we have 11 people to hear, and I know they're all going to hang around for the vote. So I want to go through, if I can, all the testimony, if that's acceptable. I think because I want to hear both sides before we start throwing out questions, if that's all right. And so, Ms. Kelleher, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
For that. And I understand there's a Keith Carlson next on the list to testify, if he is here. Mr. Carlson, okay. Please state your name and you may proceed.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Members, I'm Keith Carlson. I'm Executive Director of the Minnesota Inter-County Association that consists of 13 of the larger counties in the state of Minnesota. I'm here today in support of this bill. Ms. Kelleher did a fairly good job of describing Section 1, and I just want to briefly add a few comments regarding it before I go on to Section 2, which most of my comments will relate to. Section 1 prevents a situation that all employers want to avoid, and that's one of adverse selection. Under the current state law, any employee group can select at any time to exit the common group insurance program that covers all employees and go into PEEP, leaving the remaining employee groups stranded. We have seen situations such as occurred in the city of Bemidji a few years ago where the police union elected to go into PEEP on a temporary basis. Because of the age, the demographics of that group, what happened is basically they got a better deal with PEEP for a while, but all the other employees left behind in the city because the demographics of theirs was worse from a health insurance was socked with an extraordinary increase in their rates. And that's exactly what we want to avoid as employers. We also want to avoid the difficulties that are created by having to administer multiple health care plans. It takes an extreme amount of time on the behalf of our human resources departments to annually go through open enrollment, and it'd be vastly complicated if now we had two plans instead of one to counsel our employees on what the benefits are and what their choices are. Going on to Section 2 of the bill, this relates to retiree health care. Since 2007, depending on the size of the employer, there is a new accounting standard referred to as GASB, Governmental Accounting Standards Board 45, which required public employers to stop their past practices of accounting for the cost of these on a pay-as-you-go basis, but rather account for them as the benefits accrued. This has resulted in substantial liabilities, all of a sudden showing up on the financial statements of school districts, cities, counties, and states throughout the nation. I've asked that a handout be distributed that's on our letterhead, Minnesota Intercounty Association, that has an excerpt from the latest state auditor's report that shows you the impacts of having to account for this. Briefly, the school districts that responded have a $1.5 billion liability for other post-employment benefits, which is almost exclusively retiree health care. The provision of this bill that affects this is a requirement that all local government employers must allow those retirees under age 65, at which point they qualify for Medicare, to be pooled or receive identical premiums to the active employees. What this creates is basically the premiums of the active employees and the subsidy that the employer pays goes up because obviously older individuals have higher health care costs, and were it absent this, they would pay higher premiums. This creates what, under the accounting rule that I referred to, an implicit subsidy. And if you look in the paragraph below the table, you'll see first the $1.4 billion overall liability that's stated. But this implicit subsidy, solely due to the operation of this one provision in state law, is nearly over $500 million. This, again, is an amount that has to be shown on the financial statements of each and every governmental unit in the state of Minnesota, and is an amount that ultimately has to be paid off. Now, I understand that the police and fire representatives have some concerns with this, and we frankly have no opposition to carving them out since they are required to retire early. But for other public employees, where it's solely based on their choice, we do object to the taxpayer, the employer, and the active employees subsidizing these individuals on what's a voluntary choice. So we highly recommend that you enact Section 2 of this bill as well as Section 1. At this point, I'll stop and be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Carlson. We're going to keep moving forward with our testifiers. Ms. Ann Finn, we're here. Please state your name for the record, and you may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Erin Ryan, actually. I am with the League of Minnesota Cities. The League supports the reforms outlined in Senate File 247. Others have articulated their concerns or the issues that have been experienced with employee groups unilaterally moving into the public employee insurance program. This has been a concern, as Mr. Carlson indicated, for some cities, the city of Bemidji being one city that has experienced this recently. And we concur with the issues already expressed by other proponents of the bill. Cities as employers should have a voice in determining what coverage they will offer to employees. If you look at this particular issue in reverse, a city could not unilaterally decide to move an employee group to a different plan or to a different carrier without first negotiating the change in the aggregate value of benefits. We think that this levels the playing field to get both parties to the table to negotiate such changes. So with that, I won't take any more of your time. Again, we support the reforms outlined in Senate File 247, and I would be happy to take questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Ryan. We'll move on. Brian Rice, Minneapolis Police. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Committee members, my name is James Michaels. I am a representative of the Minneapolis Police Federation and the Minnesota Professional Firefighters. I'm an attorney who does collective bargaining, and I represent about 25 public employee groups throughout the state of Minnesota. I'm here today to talk about Section 2 of the bill. We understand that the presumed purpose of the bill is to make health insurance less expensive for public employers. That is certainly a laudable goal. However, the proposal with regard to the amendment contained in Section 2 of the bill will not achieve that goal. The problem that we're all facing, employers and employees alike, has to do with the overall cost of health care and the rate at which it continues to increase. And until something is done at the state or federal level to bring about systemic changes to control costs, measures such as this are simply nothing more than giving a placebo to a cancer patient. Shoving the costs of health care from government to older people neither solves nor addresses the problem. The only certain impact, if this legislation were to pass, would be to substantially raise the cost of health insurance to those retirees who are not yet eligible for Medicare. Ultimately, this will not result in lower costs to public employers. The number of pre-65 retirees continues to shrink because of the fact that their health care is so expensive. This is even under the current landscape where pooling is mandated. Most of these people, no longer, as they approach the decision to retire or not, don't retire. They remain employed, and therefore they remain in the pool, and this legislation will not remove them. The negative impact on public employees is not limited to those folks either. It also relates to the employer's inability, when older, more highly paid employees choose to remain, they cannot be replaced with younger, less expensive employees. Secondly, we already are facing, in most of the cities that I and counties that I work with, what has been called by many as an insurance ghetto. Mr. Carlson, in his testimony, referred to adverse selection. This is already occurring because even under the pooled plans, healthy retirees are able to obtain coverage less expensive on the open market, and so they choose not to participate, which leaves our active group of retirees being those who need the coverage because they are uninsurable on the open market. Eliminating them and making them pay more by pooling will just increase the costs to other retirees. And so those that could possibly have options elsewhere will elect those. And it will just increase the cost of the remaining people who are in the pool. Third, the presumption that carving out the pre-65 retirees will save money is predicated upon trusting the insurance providers to pass those savings along. There is, quite frankly, nothing that warrants that trust. And if you don't believe me, I encourage you to read Wendell Potter's book, Deadly Spin. It should be mandatory reading for every American and certainly every elected official. The actual result, if this legislation were to pass, would be a minimal increase on the cost of premiums for those employees that are covered, while the insurance companies would be allowed to charge far more for those pre-65 retirees. Finally, this has an adverse impact on law enforcement and firefighters because those are the folks that primarily make up the group of under 65 retirees. There's a strong public policy reason that supports law enforcement and firefighters from being able to retire before age 65, and that's because of the physical demands of their job. If this legislation were to pass, it would be highly likely that firefighters and police officers would choose to remain employed until age 65 because they could not afford their insurance premiums. That's not good for employees, and it's not good for public safety either. Everyone knows that the majority of violent criminal offenders in this state and elsewhere are between the ages of 18 and 30. Sending a 65-year-old police officer into a situation of having to arrest a 21-year-old violent offender doesn't get the job done. We don't want to be in a situation where we encourage officers to have to stay on the job simply because they can't afford the cost of their health care. Ultimately, as I said, if we all want to result in lower costs to employers, I hold out the city of Minneapolis as an example. The City of Minneapolis over the last several years has focused and made a huge investment jointly through labor management negotiations to invest in a wellness program. Last year, this resulted for the first time in memory, if not history, that the cost that our provider had to pay for claims, including the retirees, was less than the total premiums they collected. We are continuing to explore additional wellness possibilities that will achieve further cost savings and reductions in our premium over time. That's where our efforts should be until, as I said at the beginning of my testimony, we have some systemic changes to control costs overall. Thank you.
Thank you. Please, we have nothing further to say. Thank you. Do we have Mr. Delmonico?
Nope,
you're fine. Mr. Thornburg?
That was me.
You're fine. All right, I thought so. Let's move on to Mr. Granger. Please state your name and you may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, Committee, my name is Jim Granger. I work for Education Minnesota. I taught for over 30 years before I joined the staff of Education Minnesota. During those 30 plus years of teaching, I was very actively involved with health insurance, in my district, Detroit Lakes, and my region, as I was on the Lakes Country Service Co-op Insurance Advisory Committee. During that time, I watched the service co-op search for ways to keep the price of health insurance down. Their solution almost always ended at increasing co-payments, deductibles, reducing benefits, increasing premiums, or offering a lesser plan. They saw no other way, and the cost of health care premiums rose at rates that were and are unsustainable. During the majority of these years, the employees of the public schools were essentially held hostage as the service co-ops had enacted a policy kicking a district out of the pool if it sought a bid from a different vendor. It was when the legislature passed the bill that allowed bargaining units to seek their own bids that we had a chance to enter the competitive market.
Chuck.
Alexandria teachers were the first to leave Lakes Country Service Co-op. They requested a bid from Public Employee Insurance Plan, known as PEEP, and found it to their liking. They asked the rest of the district to join, but the administration declined for the rest of the district. I believe Alexandria administration declined partially because their business manager served on the Insurance Co-op Advisory Committee. Over the next years, Alexandria teachers enjoyed a smaller increase in premium cost than did the rest of the Alexandria employees. Detroit Lakes' story is similar. The business manager for Detroit Lakes serves on the Insurance Advisory Committee. When I went to talk to him about looking at PEEP, he wasn't interested, nor was the superintendent. We proceeded with the process of educating the staff on how PEEP worked. They made an informed decision to go with PEEP, even though it would cost each person about $20 a month more in premiums. They did this because they saw that the PEEP model of managed competition shifted the emphasis to primary care clinics competing for my business. This competition is designed to help keep the cost of health care down without shifting the cost to me. It worked. The first premium renewal for Detroit Lakes teachers was an 8.75% increase. The rest of the district employees who were not able to join us and who were with the Lakes Country Service Co-op had an 11.4% increase. This year, the 2009 pool, of which Detroit Lakes is part of, saw an average decrease of 6.6%, with Detroit Lakes teachers seeing a 2% decrease. To put it simply, the plan continues to work. Look at the history of the state employees plan known as the Advantage Plan. It's the same one that you have opportunities to use. Over the last 6 years, the average increase for the state employees has been just 3.5%. It is my experience that school administrators view health insurance as an area exclusively for them. I believe their proximity to the source of the product and their lack of effort to explore alternatives help blind them to the potential PEEP offers employees to save money. I have spent many hours explaining the law that allows bargaining units to seek bids to school employees and to administrators. The scenario plays out again, the same time and time again. The employees were interested, and the administrators, for the most part, were not. I can only surmise that their disinterest is based on the fact that most serve on their respective service co-op boards. They have an interest in keeping the business right where it is. I contend that if the employees in the 14 school districts who formed a health care pool hadn't decided to exercise their opportunities under the law, they would be paying a lot more in health care premiums. They would be just another part of the problem instead of actively looking for solutions. This year, a new pool is forming, as was mentioned, and it has the potential to have close to 200 districts involved. Because of that, I believe, and partially, at least one service co-op, the one I'm most familiar with, has dropped their rates. I believe that's directly related to the direct competition they're facing. Senate File 247 will take away the opportunity for school employees to act on their own to explore saving money for themselves, the school district, and ultimately the state. If school district administrators won't act, school employees should be allowed to on their own. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Olson. Please state your name and you may proceed.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, my name is Paul Olson, and I'm a school teacher from Moose Lake, Minnesota. And I'm really here to just tell you a little bit about our experience in switching to PEEP. We had, for as long as I can remember, always been a part of the service cooperative, and that's where we got our insurance from. Over those years, and I actually have been teaching for 25 years now, and over the years, we've seen slowly and steadily increases in our insurance premiums. We've actually seen increases of up to 25% some years. We had also seen in the last, 6 years, decreases in our coverage, more co-pays, in essence, always just a reduction in what we're getting for the dollars we're spending. The opportunity came up. PEEP was looking at doing a what we consider to be a true pool. The service cooperative really, they called it a pool, but in actuality, it was Moose Lake School, and rates were set on our usage, just our usage alone. And the service cooperative represents, in northeastern Minnesota, a large number of schools. And so the school districts to the north of us, and, you know, they were also assessed individually. They weren't truly pooled. So when PEEP came up with the idea of pooling, we decided to look into it. Just to give you a little background on that, 2 years ago, we opted in. It turned out to be 14 schools and about 4,500 people that are in this pool. The very first year, we had some information that we had a partial information on a couple of the school districts that came in, Duluth being one of them. And so we saw a little increase, a 6% increase that first year. But we were pretty excited that it wasn't more than that for our little tiny district. This last year, our second year in the pool, we actually, the entire pool saw a 6.6% decrease. But Moose Lake School District alone saw a 23% decrease in our premiums. Just to give you a little bit more on where that goes, on a personal note, my wife and I both teach at the school, and we have a family plan. And because the district has a capped dollar amount, they give us a certain amount for a single coverage and a family coverage, and then we pay all of the increase from there. So we pay a larger portion of the premium than the school contributes, which, and we're willing to do that. In this particular case, with our 23% decrease and a change that we chose to do in our coverage, we're going to see $1,000 a month savings. That's very significant for our family. The district also will see a savings because of the set dollar amount that they have for individual coverage. Those teachers that have chosen to go with an HSA, which is many of our single people, the district actually has allotted more than the premium cost. So now it sounds like not a lot of money, but for each individual, that's $275 a year. But I want to remind you that Moose Lake is a very small school. And with 20 employees, at $275 a year, that's a little over $5,000. Our entire gifted and talented budget in our elementary school is $5,000. So we can take that money, our district can take that money and do something productive with it. And all because we opted for this pool. And this pool has treated us well. I know it was mentioned that the concern is that other groups are being left behind. I want you to know that when we looked into PEEP, we repeatedly met with our support staff and our administrators and asked them numerous times to join us. They opted not to. They weren't asked once. They were asked many, many times. Since they didn't join, we did as teacher group. They now are down to 14 people that opted to stay with the service cooperative. They're paying a higher rate for the same kind of coverage. And I lost my train of thought here. But they, because of that, and they're down to 14 people. Most of those have looked for insurance outside of the school district. I guess really that's about all I have to say. I really want to make sure that it's understood that everything we talk about really affects people's lives, and I'm one of those people. This is a big benefit to us, and if these other districts are allowed to also form and join the pool with PEEP, our pool of 14 schools would be put into that, and because that pool would widen things out, we would probably realize more of a savings. And this is something that we haven't seen in many, many, many years. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Olson. Please state your name and proceed.
Hi, I'm Lee Stevenson. I'm a teacher in the Moose Lake School District as well. I teach high school social studies. And I wanted to speak briefly on a specific element of the bill that would prevent other school districts from doing what Moose Lake has done and prevent other individuals from seeing the kind of cost savings that Mr. Olson spoke of. In the bill, on line 1.24, it says that the eligible employer approves the decision to opt into the program. And in a school district, that is likely to be the school superintendent. So if the staff votes to go into the PEEP program, the school superintendent could veto that. And you might ask yourself, if there are cost savings to be had, why would a school administrator not support that? And in reality, there is incentive for school superintendents to keep the school employees a part of the service co-op. The service co-op uses the health insurance premiums from the teachers, from the employees, as a revenue stream. And because of that incentive, that particular language in this bill, I believe, is going to prevent employees from moving to PEEP, even if they had a majority vote. Our vote at our school was nearly unanimous. Only one person voted against joining the PEEP pool, and you know, we did vote to have increased rates for the first year, and that may seem counterintuitive. Why does somebody vote to have higher insurance premiums? But we just believed that rather than our little school district being its own pool, if we could join a real pool, a substantial pool of thousands of members, we would see rate decreases because of that. And of course, like you just heard, we have. So I guess my main point that I'd like to make is that a vote on this bill, a yes vote on this bill, actually is a vote that is going to prevent free market economic principles from taking place. PEEP is the competition to the service co-ops. And if the leaders of the service co-ops can prevent a school district employees from leaving, and they do have an incentive to do that, then it is unlikely that they would allow members to leave. So I think, the inertia of a government bureaucracy is at play here. The service co-ops want to continue their existence and continue their revenue stream, and the leaders of the service co-ops are also the administrators and board members of the schools, and that sort of inertia that people recognize as existing in government bureaucracies is going to rule the day if this bill passes, and there is that veto power by school superintendents. So I'll just conclude my remarks by saying that there is some innovation going on already in state government, and that innovation is the competition at play between service co-ops and the PEEP pool. And that competition, that free market principle, is going to die if there's veto power by an administrator who is also on the board of the service cooperative.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, gentlemen. Ms. Alzwacker? Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Jan Alzwacker, Education Minnesota. And I have testified on a similar bill in the past, so I'm going to not repeat all of what I have said. But there are a couple points worth repeating. The last few years, Education Minnesota has been working very hard to get a statewide health insurance bill passed. And the legislature said to us, and the governor said to us, Governor Plenty said, we want it voluntary and we want to have competition. Every organization that was out there on the other side said it should be voluntary and competitive. So that's what we have done. As a result of having over 220 school district employee groups going to PEEP for the voluntary competitive bid, now we see a bill that would take away give the school board veto power over our ability either to go in or at the end of the first year contract to be able to terminate the contract within 30 days of the termination of the contract. As you've heard from the previous testifiers, there is significant competition going on, and our members are finally seeing some relief in premiums. The Duluth School District was with Health Partners as of June 30th and then into July 1st of this summer. They will save $1.7 million over their projected insurance costs because the Duluth School District is going into PEEP. We believe that one of the major points that we hear from people is that the school board should have the authority to make these decisions. The statute states that under the service co-op statute, under 123A.21, subdivision 4, a majority of the members of the service co-op board of directors shall be current members of school boards of participating public school districts. Education Minnesota feels that 100% of our members' insurance money should be used for the insurance product or for the administration of the insurance. But the service co-op has testified in the past that they support programs like Knowledge Bowl, Spelling Bee, Teacher of the Year, and these, we believe that it is inappropriate for those monies to be used, those insurance premium dollars to be used for those programs. School districts benefit from that. I'm not denying that. But that is another reason why school districts might not want to have a teacher group or school employee group go outside of the service co-ops, because they might lose some funding. I would suggest that you take a look at the 2005 State Auditor Pat Anderson's audit on the service co-op to see some of the other conflicts that are listed in that document. I believe that you have seen some excellent examples of the savings. Before I move on, I should tell you one other thing, because this now is resolved. In the Detroit Lakes School Districts, $75,000 basically was overcharged in premiums 3 years ago or so. and it went back as a rebate to the school district. This is money that our members have paid, and as the year following, $168,000 additional. So we have $75,000 and $168,000 that was rebated back to the school district, not to the employees. The teachers there filed a grievance, and after 2 years, they are now reaching a settlement. We believe this is happening all over the state, and in fact, we have information related to a public data request. So while I understand why individuals here or elsewhere would say that the school boards should be able to have an equal say, the problem is that they have everything to lose or something to lose by having the teachers go to a voluntary competitive system where they could get health insurance. There is far more to this that I think best not to bring up here today. But in the interest of making sure that you are aware to some extent of what's happening, I will share that for the moment. We also are very concerned about Section 2, and that relates to the retirees being pulled out in a separate pool. I believe that not only would it be costly to the district because these individuals would not be retiring, many of them, until age 65, meaning they wouldn't be able to recoup the savings from when an individual retires at 59 and hire a younger employee. But in addition, I think it would also increase the state's costs because these are going to be more expensive people. And they very likely are not going to be able to buy private insurance on the regular market and will likely end up going into MCHA, increasing the cost there as well. So we encourage you to vote against the bill in its entirety. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Ms. Salzweiger. All right, it's that time of the hearing for questions from the members. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Dames, I just had a couple questions, I guess, about the bill. I'm very uncomfortable with the language in Section 2, not just for the firefighters and the police, who understandably need to retire at an earlier age, but I think for all of those who have already retired or are very, very near retirement, I think it's really kind of unfair for someone who's doing some planning over a long period of time to all of a sudden have a rug pulled out from under them. Mr. Chair, I would like to move to strike Section 2 from this bill.
Senator Carlson moves to strike Section 2 from the bill. Senator Dean?
I would accept that, Mr. Chair.
All right. Mr. Bonner. That's fine. All right. Any further discussion? All those in favor of the Carlson oral amendment to strike Section 2 from the bill, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, same sign. Amendment prevails. Further discussion on Senate File 247. Can I ask, I'm going to ask Senator Dibble, Mr. Bodern, there's been some comment about the re-referral of this bill to local government?
Mr. Chairman, there is now, and it's more technical in nature, but there were two sections in the bill that dealt with local government statutes. Section 3 remains in the bill. That's in Chapter 471. This is really more technical. I think the other issue would be whether or not it needs to be referred to the Commerce Committee. Basically, everything you have in here at this point is simply related to the administration of the PEEP program and a technical change in local government employee insurance requirements. I don't see the need for a re-referral, but that's always subject to the wishes of the chairs for those committees as well.
Okay. Well, we did hear from Commerce that they're not, they don't feel that they need to hear this bill. Senator Dibble.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. That's interesting because when we had the school employee insurance bill up on the floor, everyone thought it was pretty important to get that to Commerce, but that's not. I apologize, Mr. Chair, for missing the first part of the meeting. I'm wondering, Senator Dames, could let us know. Senator Dames, what is your central goal with this bill? Is it to save healthcare dollars?
The central goal, Senator Dames, is, Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, the goal is to get involvement by all parties involved. It's going to get the school board involved in the decision. It's also going to get the employees involved in making the decision that they want to make this transfer. It also changes from 2 years being in at renewal to 1 year, so it gives them the option to opt out and to look around.
Thank you.
Senator Dibble.
Thanks. I appreciate knowing that. So, Senator Dames, how do you respond to the critique that we heard from the witnesses that argue that that might be a flawed approach because of the inherent conflict that the co-ops have and kind of the captive audience they have, particularly with respect to the leadership of those particular districts, and the fact that as more and more school employees have been looking at the PEEP, they've introduced an element of actual competition that has caused tremendous savings on all parties' parts.
Senator Dean.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, I think I'd answer that question this way, and that is this does not change the ability for the schools to get into the PEEP program. It just allows all parties to have a say in the fact that they're going to do it. So they still can go into the PEEP program. The other thing to keep in mind that this bill doesn't do anything with, but I hope that we're all cognizant of what may happen here if we get several school districts going into this program. Keep in mind there's only a certain percentage of the premium that can be used to administer the program. So if we get several districts coming into this program all at one time, we could see some very interesting challenges in servicing this process with claims and things like that.
Senator Dibble.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I still haven't heard a response to the argument that, in effect, it doesn't allow school districts to go under the PEEP because of the conflict and the captive audience nature of the co-ops with those particular organizations and their leadership. So it, in fact, represents a significant barrier from folks' ability to get into the PEEP. I want to respond to your second point in just a minute.
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Dibble, I hear there's conflict. I'm not in the school board. I'm not in the school administration, so I have not seen those conflicts, so I'm going to leave it at that. I would assume and hope that the school boards will do what's in best interest for their bottom line. And I'm going to take the thought that they'll do that.
Senator Dibble.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, we all hope that, but I don't think we have any evidence that that's actually occurred with respect to the extension of health care to their own employees. We see time and again them going with the more expensive option because of the relationships and, frankly, the power and control issues. And so we've seen resistance to actually going into something like the PEEP or something larger that we called the SEEP concept, which was the statewide school employees insurance program modeled on the PEEP. And on that point, I think we showed fairly definitively with the local impact note that I shared on the floor of the Senate when I offered the amendment to Senator Olson's bill that, in fact, there's tremendous cost savings, and because it's a pooled, large pool, self-insured, the ability to administer and the economies of scale show that there's sufficient ability to do the administration, to process the claims, to have the resources necessary with a pool of that size. So I think to your second point, that question has been asked and answered already in a fairly intensive examination of this idea taken to scale. And if you like, I can share that local impact note with you another time.
Mr. Chair, Senator Dibble, we'll see how that plays out. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Dames, I had thought in looking at this bill that this was kind of a top-down bill to try to impose savings costs. As I heard your comments, relative to the bill, that this is apparently something that ought to be welcomed by the districts as a means of trying to broaden insurance pools and so on. So I'm just curious, how many school districts have requested this legislation, as best you know? Second, if we put aside union leadership, but if we look at, because we've heard from some of those folks, but put aside union leadership, how are there employee groups or even individuals who sought this legislation? I mean, I haven't heard from anybody in my district or my school district relative to that, so I'm curious in terms of the statewide pool, how many groups, districts, folks have requested this?
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, are you asking how many groups have how many school districts are requesting to go into the PEEP program? Is that what you're asking?
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman, Senator Dames. How many school districts are in support of this legislation?
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair and Senator Cohen, I do not know how many school districts are in support of the legislation. However, as I understand, there's approximately 200 school districts that are requesting bids for the PEEP program.
Senator Cohen?
No, go ahead.
Oh, Senator Chair. Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. First question, Senator Dames, is this. A few years ago, superintendents had kind of premium plans compared to what the employees have. Is that still the case that in a number of these school districts, the superintendents have different plans than the employees and sometimes the administration as well in the school districts across the state?
Senator
Chairman
Dance.
Perry and Senator Goodwin, I do not know.
Okay. And then
Senator Goodwin.
Maybe somebody can answer from the School Board Association. To let us know that, because I know that's seems to be an incentive for the another little conflict of interest. But the other issue is fiscal notes. It seems to me that there would be a change in based on the preference of the school districts to preserve this money in their own district account rather than spending it for the health care that it's meant for. There would be a considerable cost to this program. Do you have a fiscal note?
Senator Mr. Dance. Chairman and Senator Goodwin, I do not have a fiscal note because this program is set up to be a self-sustaining program. The state of Minnesota is not providing funds into this program. And that's what we have to be aware of, is that the state of Minnesota does not participate fund-wise into this program. So there is a cap on the amount that can be used for administration. So if we get several school districts coming in at one time, we could see a problem getting the folks to administer the program during the interim, why the percentage that they can take catches up with the cost to get it implemented.
Senator Goodwin.
To finish that thought, Mr. Chair, thank you. And Senator Dames. I understand that it doesn't have an effect on the state finances, which is actually another reason why I'm kind of concerned about doing this and changing it right now, especially when some of the districts have reported such huge savings as a result of being in PEEP. So then, again, I guess I would say, what's the goal here? What's the goal here? If its goal is to save money, it sounds like this program is currently successful at doing that.
Senator Goodwin, I think I'm going to have Mr. Morocco see if he can answer
good.
Your question on, I think you were asking about the fiscal note.
Right.
Mr. Morocco, could you introduce yourself and then maybe answer that?
Sure, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nathan Morocco. I'm director of the Employee Insurance Division, and I oversee the Public Employee Insurance Program. I think your question related to a fiscal note. As the senator indicated, this is all just local dollars, so mm-hmm. there wouldn't be any state funds on the line, whether it be a cost or a savings. If you're referring to a cost at the local level, I'm not sure. I think I would need more detail about where you think the cost or savings would be generated from.
Does that answer your
Sure. No, I Goodwin. Understand. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I understand that there's not a cost savings at the state level, which is why I'm wondering what the actual goal is going to be here, what the purpose of this legislation is. But I don't think it wouldn't be a bad thing to get a fiscal note that of the effect on the local level, because when we did the health savings accounts here, or some people did, there was actually no cost to the state then either, but some people were supposedly concerned about contracts. The one issue that I am concerned about as well is the fact that once this legislation, if this legislation were to pass, it would be one more way to cut the collective bargaining process, and that what is the problem with negotiating the health insurance and the packages? This would actually prohibit negotiations on.
Senator Dane.
Mr. Chair and Senator Goodwin, with the amendment that was amended on this, it does not prohibit negotiations. It's part of the negotiations. Both the representatives from the union or the collective bargaining unit and the school have to agree. So it's part of the negotiations. So it's not reducing collective bargaining.
Okay, thank you.
I want to move over here. You wanted to respond to a question before I go to Senator Wigger. Is that correct, Senator?
Thanks, Mr. Chair. Now, I think the term of art, Senator Goodwin, is a local impact note.
Thank you.
Which is distinct from a fiscal note, which only examines impact on state resources, revenues, and expenditures. And so a local impact note is probably what we're looking for. And I think based on the testimony, there would be an impact to locals if they were, you know, bound to these service co-ops, which there's an argument they would be. I do have another question, though, for Mr. Morocco. He slipped away too quickly. Mr. Morocco, similar to the question that was before the committee on the
I'm just sitting here, Senator Dames, and I'm just thinking with the questions that are coming up, I'm not so sure that from here it shouldn't go to local government. I mean, are you thinking that? We're receiving a lot of questions about what this will do on the local, and you have not been there before, have you?
Mr. Chair, no. This is a first stop for this bill.
All right, let me think about that. Senator Dibble.
Thanks. If I understood a contention by Senator Dames, it was that somehow if all these 200 local units move into the PEEP at one time, there'd be a problem responding to having sufficient revenues for the claims from premiums. Can you help us understand how the PEEP would handle that eventuality if all 200 districts were to move into the PEEP in one fell swoop, how they would deal with the early days of having enough revenue on hand to respond to claims?
Senator Dames.
Mr. Chair, could I respond to Senator Dibble?
Yes.
My contention was not about the claims. My contention was to get the program up and running with limited resources would be the problem. That was my contention, and I just want to clarify that.
Thank you. I appreciate that, Mr.
Morocco.
Chair. And that's an issue we also dealt with in establishing the parameters for the SEEP, which would be like what's happening, what could potentially happen now, but on a larger scale. Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, certainly we have groups that are renewing every month, and there are a lot of folks that have come to PEEP for a bid recently. We have no way of knowing how many are interested. In prior years, we've had 80-plus groups asking for quotes, and I think we had less than 10 come in. So it's not uncommon for us to receive a lot of quotes, and so we don't, even if they were to come in, they may come in at different periods of time. So there would be a lot of considerations. But in a very simplistic way, if we thought there was going to be a large influx, we would simply reinsure our program at a much more aggressive level, meaning that we're protecting the state and the current assets of the program so that a reinsurance organization bears most of that risk, if not of all the risks that we're unwilling to take. What that means is that the local units pay a higher premium as a result of that. So if there were to be a large influx, that's not likely just because they will be renewing at different times. But certainly if in the worst case scenario, we would simply just reinsure our program at a very aggressive level.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Dibble.
And how, I mean, again, very simplistic, I understand it could happen. It could be 10, it could be 200, but you know, thinking about the higher end, how long would that reinsurance have to be established, and how long in before that higher level of premium would eventually fade away as the larger scaled up program were established?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, without any specific parameters, I would say in a very general sense, probably about 2 years would be all it would take. I mean, certainly if you had a large group coming in, you would have a large influx of premiums coming in without any claims on the book. So in some senses, you would actually get a large influx of money without any expenses, you know, not knowing how the claims might come in. You know, you probably within 1 to 2 years could stabilize the program, and then you would essentially be operating more in a maintenance mode.
Thank you.
And one more.
Senator Dibble.
And is it not true, Mr. Morocco, that if folks were to come into the PEEP in large numbers, there wouldn't be the need to have to establish a whole lot of new infrastructure? The plan is basically already established and formatted. The software is already in place. A lot of the personnel, a lot of the templates, a lot of the infrastructure, contracts, et cetera, already in place. So it's not as if though we're creating a whole new plan from scratch that would. So there's some existing economies of scale that we can take advantage of.
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, yeah, certainly our program is built to be scalable. You know, because we never know how many folks are going to be in there, we've built it in such a way that, you know, the contracts allow for as many lives as we need, and the processes can expand pretty in a fairly straightforward manner.
Right. Senator Dibble.
So thank you. So Senator Dames, in light of that information, how do you respond?
Senator Dames?
One of your arguments. That's one of your central arguments of your bill. And
Mr. Chair and Senator Dibble, we'll see how it plays out.
Well, I think we got the information from the professional that it'll play out just fine. So how do you respond?
We'll see. Thank you.
Senator Wigger?
Thank you. Mr. Chair, I offer the A3 amendment.
Senator Wigger offers the A3 amendment.
Mr. Chair, I could highlight it as it's being passed out, if you would permit.
Please do.
Mr. Chair, members, this would have us go to the current system of allowing the exclusive rep to approve the decision as to whether to opt into the program. There's been reference to the state PEEP program, earlier attempts to make it a mandatory program in a state pool. I have opposed those efforts in the past because my local school board, as well as the teachers, wanted the decision at the local level and did not want to have it mandated. However, I strongly supported, and many people that were against the proposal said there is the opt-in tool available. And that said, with that tool available, I had never heard anyone arguing against it. I most recently met with one of my local school boards. This never came up. And the testimony from the Moose Lake teachers, I think, was convincing. Many of these teachers and others in schools, earnings that they might get in additional pay, which has not been occurring, they're losing money because of health care. They're trying to get additional option through the competitive system. We support competition, and because of that, I would say let's have that option available to the exclusive rep, and again would ask for a roll call vote on the A3 amendment.
Roll call has been requested and granted. Mr. Bodden, how does this line up now with the amended after the A2 amendment?
Mr. Chairman, the A3 amendment was drafted to the bill as it was introduced, and it does not engross together with the A2 amendment. What the A3 amendment did originally was just clarify that the exclusive representative would have the ability to participate in the final decision whether to opt into the program. The A2 amendment, as it was adopted, does clarify that the eligible employer and the exclusive representative have to agree to the change before that can occur. And there is an additional requirement then that a majority of all of the insurance-eligible employees of the bargaining unit would have to vote to approve that change. So in a sense, some of what the A3 amendment addressed is taken care of in the A2 amendment. And I think it needs some direction in order to be able to provide an amendment that would do what Senator Wigger wishes to accomplish.
So, Senator Wigger, so your amendment, what you're hoping to do here is to take the employer out of this?
Yes, Mr. Chair, the system has been working, in my opinion, where the exclusive rep, if they went to PEEP for coverage, as has been done, and I would want that to continue without the employer having to approve that. It has been working. It's been pointed out in the past that it's a system that's been working until just now in testimony.
Mr. Bonner?
Mr. Chairman, I think I could work with Senator Wigger to put together a change to the A2 amendment. I think that would be the option to try to amend the A2 amendment to accomplish what Senator Wigger would like to do. Right now, the A3 amendment, as I said, is unengrossable and won't work that way, and I'd need just a moment or two to work together with Senator Wigger to accomplish that for him.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I'll withdraw the A3 in light of Mr. Bodern's advice and come back.
Thank you. Senator Wigger withdraws the A3 amendment. Members, it is my intent. I've heard enough. It is my intent that this bill will end up going to state government if we move it, or local government if we move it out of this committee, just based on some of the conversations that we have. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question for Mr. Morocco. Perhaps Mr. Morocco would want to stay at the table. I believe this question is for Mr. Morocco. Ms. Morocco, does the PEEP, Public Employees Insurance Program, pay the same percentage into the MCHA program that private carriers and groups pay?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, we do not pay any of the premium taxes, the MCHA or the premium taxes, in the same way as any other self-insured. So in terms of local governments that have access to PEEP, if they are a fully insured product with the health plans, then they are currently paying those premium taxes. PEEP does not. If they are with a cooperative, that is more like PEEP, which is a self-insured pool. So similarly, we don't pay in the same way as the co-ops or anybody else who's self-insured.
Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So as a follow-up, Mr. Morocco, would you say that if as more and more groups could potentially move into PEEP with this option, would you expect that we'd have a negative impact on the ability of MCHA to provide those services to people with pre-existing conditions that would be sort of a negative on the health care that we provide in Minnesota, wouldn't you think?
Mr. Morocco.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, that's difficult to say. It depends on where we would potentially get these folks. Obviously, if they come from the health plans, then that would be a tax loss to the state. If they're coming from the cooperatives, then it would be, a net zero, I guess. In some ways, PEEP, you mentioned MCHA, and I'll just respond, in that PEEP in some ways is almost like an MCHA product. It is a guaranteed issue policy. We don't drop people or we don't rate them or choose not to renew them. They have a legal or you have legislated that they have a right to come into PEEP. So MCHA, I think, in the fully insured market, where perhaps they're dropping individual risks, we don't have that option. So in some ways, we do actually operate like an MCHA program.
Senator Carlson.
But, Mr. Morocco, wouldn't it be true that most people, if they're coming into PEEP, would have been coming from either the pool or another small group or maybe even a large group, and those large groups have to take pre-existing conditions as well? And so you're really only moving somebody that had guaranteed insurability from one group into a guaranteed insurability. So we really aren't talking about an impact from MCHA from that standpoint. I guess my concern is not so much whether someone moves into PEEP or not moves into PEEP. I'm really concerned about this viability of the program for MCHA, and all of a sudden we keep seeing a dwindling amount of programs and payer groups paying into MCHA to make sure that we have a viable program for people with pre-existing conditions. And I guess maybe I need to offer a bill that no matter who you are, whether it's CGIP, PEEP, co-op, whatever, that they pay their share into MCHA. But I'm really concerned about that.
Well, thank you, Mr. Morocco. Senator Goodwin, did you have a comment?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wasn't sure if Senator Carlson understood that the co-ops don't have to be part of MCHA either. That would be, you didn't know that. Okay, thank you.
Any further discussion on Senate File 247?
Mr. Chair, I would request that somebody move the passage of Senate File 247. I think that it gives the school districts and the representing unit an opportunity to work together to get their agreement made. It also gives the employees the opportunity to determine if they want to go into the pool or not, so I'd request the bill be moved and passed.
Senator Thompson.
Mr. Chairman, I move that Senate File 247, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Elections.
Senator Thompson moves Senate File 247, as amended, be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Committee on Local Government and Elections.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Wigger.
In light of the hour, Mr. Bodern, I know is working on language, but there's going to be another visit on this, and I can wait till later, but I would request a roll call vote.
Roll call vote has been requested and granted. Secretary, take the roll.
Chairman Perry?
Aye.
Senator Carlson?
Aye.
Senator Cohen?
No.
Senator Daley?
Yes.
Senator Dibble? Senator Gazelka?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Olson?
Yes.
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Torres-Ray?
No.
Senator Wieger?
No.
Being there six ayes and four nays, Senate File 247 passes and will be moved on to the Committee on Local Government and Elections. Senator Dames, just one thing that I'm really concerned about that I heard today, and I'm hoping that the service co-ops are paying attention to what's happening here. What bothers me the most is when I hear that they would keep rates high so that they could kick back money to schools for programs, and to me that just doesn't seem right. And I hope that more of this is brought to light. What I didn't hear today is that we've taken service co-ops to task in the public's eye, and now knowing that what they're doing, it concerns me. So I would hope that when you get into local government, some of this is brought up, because I think the public needs to know what's been going on with some of this premium money that's being paid. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Dames. The next item on the agenda is Senate File 1146. Senator Wolf. Welcome to the committee, Senator Wolf.
Thank you.
You may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do I need somebody to move the bill first?
Senator Thompson moves Senate File 1146.
Thank you, proceed. Mr. Chair. Senators, first of all, let me start out by saying that this is not an anti-union bill. This is a pro-union member bill. What this is, and I'll make let you all know, too, for those of you who don't know, that I am a teacher and I'm a member of Education Minnesota. So I am a member of a union. And what this does is, these are some tough economic times, and everybody's looking for ways to save some money. And I can't speak for all of the other public employee unions. I can only speak as a teacher and a member of Education Minnesota. But I can tell you that in my dues to Education Minnesota, which is $405 at this time, over $60 is spent on what I consider extras. I pay for three different magazines. These are the three different magazines that we get. I pay $10 to the crisis fund, $10 to a media campaign fund, $10 to political action committee, and $5 to a foundation for excellence in teaching and learning. So that makes up more than 10% of the dues that I pay to Education Minnesota. And what this bill does is change it so that instead of having those costs automatically placed on the members, it allows the members to choose whether or not they want to contribute to those particular things, to the magazines and to the foundations and to the various funds. And so rather than actually, we can only opt out of two of them. What this bill would do is make all of it an opt-in instead of an opt-out. We currently can opt out of the political portion of it and the Foundation for Excellence of Teaching and Learning. That is if you remember in October's magazine to find the page that has the application that you have to send in. It has to be on the original. It cannot be on a duplication, and it has to be received postmarked by October 31st. If you do that, then you can get up to $15 back. All the other ones you cannot opt out of. And so, in a nutshell, that is what this bill does.
So Senator Wolf, mm-hmm. Does your bill then maintain dues for your collective bargaining?
What they use
for collective
bargaining? Mr. Chair, Senators, this does nothing for the collective bargaining. It doesn't do anything to arbitration, to negotiations. The union is still responsible for all the normal duties that it does. This just allows a way for members not to have to pay for all the extras.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Chairman.
Senator Cohen.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Wolf, a few questions. So right now as a teacher, you can opt out of a part of it. Is that correct?
Senator Wolf.
There is a policy in place which after I've taught for 24 years, I didn't know it existed until after 20 years of teaching. But for part of it, for $15 out of the $60, I can opt out.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, and you indicated that when you started, this is not an anti-union measure. This is, you talked about budget problems. I'm not sure how this solves budget problems, but.
Mr. Cohen, this puts $60 back in my pocket as a union member.
Senator Cohen.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wolf, it helps your budget problems, not the state's budget problems.
Mm-hmm. Correct.
Okay. And so, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wolf, I think you indicated this was kind of a free choice for – this is my paraphrase. This would be a free choice for the employees, for the particular union members. Is that correct?
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Cohen, yes, it would be up to the – paying members to choose whether or not to pay for all those extras.
Okay.
Senator Cohen.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Wolf, that begs the question then. So why don't we amend the bill so that the individual can, one, opt out of everything, not just the political dues, but the magazines, the foundations, whatever it is, that the individual can opt out of the entirety of the $60 or whatever there might be required for any other union. Second, that there be some kind of notice provision. So you indicated, I think, that it's pretty unclear as to what somebody can do or cannot do, that we have some better ability, maybe some notices given to employees that if you opt out by such and such a date, this will not be included in this year's dues. Why don't we do it that way? Because then, as I understand your rationale for the bill, that would take care of it. It would provide a totality of opt-out ability to the employee so he or she can get the $60 back and provide appropriate notice so they know what their rights are or are not. So why wouldn't we do it that way then?
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, the reason why I recommend we do it as the bill stands is I'm sure the union administration doesn't like it this way, but I'm sure the union members like that the paid union administration is the one that has to take the onus of all the effort of getting that money and not the members.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator
Wolf,
Cohen,
do we know that?
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, do we know what?
Do we know that's what the general union membership desires?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cohen, I have not surveyed all 70,000 of just the teachers, but I can tell you that I have heard from many teachers. This is not just Pam's bill. There are many teachers that are, number one, when they find out they can get the money back, that's a surprise to them. And I don't think this almost has an aura of hiding it. that teachers don't even know they can get this money back.
But Mr. Chairman, Senator Wolf, I suggest the possibility of better notice, some type of notice given to union members so they know that. So, again, hypothetically, if the bill was drafted so there was notice to a member, so it wouldn't be hidden, it wouldn't be a secret to them, they would know at the front end, and that they would have the ability to opt out of the totality of the $60, or again, whatever the figure is, would that match their concerns?
Senator Wolf, how many times as a teacher and a union member do you get notified that you have the opportunity to opt out?
Mr. Chair, I believe you find out when you first signed your contract.
So it's not an annual or beginning of the school year, end of the school year?
Mr. Chair, the form is in the catalog every year for 1 month, and you have till the end of that month to get it in. Presuming teachers are even reading the catalog and finding that and understand the process. Like I said, I taught 20 years before I knew it was even an option.
Senator Cohen, am I hearing you say that you want to amend the bill to give a complete opportunity for all teacher union members to opt out completely?
Mr. Chairman, it would seem to me that to match what Senator Wolf is suggesting, that you provide some kind of more appropriate notice so somebody is not aware of the ability to opt out, the opt-out that already exists, and second, that they have the ability to opt out of the totality. That would seem to match what Senator Wolf indicated when she presented the bill, not to do what this bill suggests, which is that any employee who wants to participate must do this in writing, and so that there is, in fact, an opt-out, not an opt-in. Because I think that's what Senator Wolf indicated at the outset, is that she was looking for the problem that exists is the knowledge of somebody to opt out.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Wolf.
Senator Cohen, I would give this analogy. As a member of a health club, if I go to pay my health club membership dues and I find, and that dues includes court time and a massage and numerous other things that I don't use, and my monthly dues are $100 a month, but I am told by the owner of the club that if I put in writing that I don't want to participate in all those things, therefore it drops my membership down to only $50 a month, I don't think that's the right way for it to be done.
Senator Cohen, do you have language that you want to offer?
No, it's the first time I've seen the bill, and I'm going to be, because of the holiday, leaving in a few minutes, so I don't have the ability to offer that, but if you want to lay this bill over, I'll prepare the amendment.
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to comment. Part of it is not just getting the money back. It's putting the responsibility on the union administration, not on the union members.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Olson.
Mr. Chair, is this asking to get the money back? Or I suppose it is. If automatically 100% is already taken out of your paycheck so that the school district is collecting the dues for the union, rather than your being able to initially, at the beginning of the year, determine what you want to opt in. Some people may want to receive the magazines, others may not, but that you don't wish to have that somehow is calculated in. But, of course, that would be the work of the school district then if you were going to do an opt-in. Rather than the organization. I'm trying to sort through in my mind who bears the burden of these various options.
Senator Wolf.
Mr. Chair, I know when we sign a contract initially and we have to become members of the union, it is the treasurer of the local who presents what we will owe in dues and then turns that in to the school district. So the treasurer would be the first step who would find out who wants what and then turn that into the school district.
Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, what you're asking for is an opportunity to check what you do want proactively rather than what you want back. It's what you want to pay in at all.
Senator Olson, that is correct.
Senator Wolf.
And I thought, Mr. Chairman and Senator Cohen, I thought that's what you were talking about. Although
Mr. Chairman,
although you lumped it. You did say that, you know, it's kind of all or nothing. This would just say that there may be some who want the publications, but they don't want to give to foundations or whatever else. I don't know if there were, what other options there were in there, but those that would be optional.
Mr. Chairman,
let me make a suggestion here, Senator Wolf. I know we have some people that would like to testify, but here's what I'm thinking. I'm hearing that Senator Cohen and even Senator Olson, maybe we can make your bill better. That's what I'm hearing, and my tendency is to lay this over and bring it back after the break so that you have time to work with Senator Cohen, Senator Olson, because are you getting the same vibe I'm hearing, that this could be made even better? Would that be acceptable to you?
That would be acceptable, Mr. Chair.
With that in mind, let's take Senate File 11.